उन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः मुखं करोति वत्सलं भङ्गुम्लं जयति गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं दीनितारिणं वञ्चकपतिभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव चापतितनं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासिदि गौरभक्तिवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. So today is the appearance day of Lord Shiva. Interesting, last year Lord Shiva's appearance day was also on a Sunday. It's the 14th, but a little earlier in the season due to the astrological changes. I would like to open with four very wonderful prayers in glorification of Lord Shiva. O he Kripala Shiva Tume Dayamaya, Krishna Bhakti Dehamara Haida Shadaya. O he Kripala Shiva, protector of the holy Dham, you are certainly very merciful. Being kind to me, please give me love for Krishna. Varamekam Vinatapi Purnat Kamabi Barshanat Bhagavat Achutyam Bhaktim Tat Paresh Vratata Tvai. O Shiva, Shankar, you are completely full. You fulfill the desires of your devotees. Seeing you, I am offering this prayer. Please fulfill my desire. Let me have unflinching bhakti to Sri Krishna. Vaishnavanam yata sambhu. This one's famous, known to all of us. Shambhu, Lord Shiva, is the chief of all the Vaishnavas. And the final one, my favorite, Srimad Gopishwaram Vande Shankaram Karunamayam Saiva Klesha Hara Devam Vrindaranya Rati Param. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Gopishwar, Lord of the Gopis, who is merciful Lord Shiva himself. He removes all troubles and grants spiritual love for Vrindavan. So who is Lord Shiva? Shankar, Shiva, Rudra, Mahadev, Gopishwar, Chakaleshwar, these are just a small collection of some of the many varied names. There's the 108 names of Lord Shiva that many times are performed in Agnihotras for the glorification and praise of Lord Shiva. Unlimited names, actually. And he's such an exalted personality that he has his own tattva, or division, if you will. You have Vishnu tattva, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. Then you have Jiva Tattva. And in between the two, you have what's called Shiva Tattva. Lord Vishnu, up to 94% of the qualities of Bhagavan Sri Krishna himself, the beautiful bluish cowherd boy of Vrindavan. The Jivatma, up to 78% of those qualities. But Lord Shiva has up to 84% of those qualities. So, in between Vishnu and the ordinary Shiva. But the question still remains, in spite of that, why do we worship Lord Shiva? I mean, the Bhagavad Gita is very, very clear that we do not worship the demigods. And who is the topmost of all demigods? Lord Shiva. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Navadvipa pastime spoke very strongly. In Navadvipa at that time, of course, the worship of demigods was the process. So Mahaprabhu spoke very strongly against this. Our most reverend and favorite acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, in his Pratana and Prem Bhakti Chandrika, also speaks very strongly against the worship of demigods. So why should we worship them? We have in our particular line and our teachings something called the Mahajans, 12 very great personalities who are there for the purpose of instructing, aiding, guiding, and assisting in our development of Prema Bhakti. So let's see who's on the ball tonight. Who can name one of them? Raise your hands. Okay. Narada Muni is one. Bali Maharaj. Dharmaraj, also known as Yamaraj. Prahlad. Nah. We save him for the end. What? Bhishma Dev? No. Others? Brahma? Huh? Janaka Maharaj? Dhruva? Who else do we have here? Kapila? Huh? Sukadev Goswami? No. We've missed Manu. And finally, Bali Maharaj. And finally, of course, Lord Shiva. So he is one of these 12 great personalities who is empowered with the service, but the position to guide us in the teachings of the Vedic understanding. One of the great personalities. And how do we respect those personalities? By worshiping them, by showing some homage to them. Not for, you know, a mundane reason or some mundane need to establish ourselves. Neither for some mundane reason do they accept that worship. We don't worship them as demigods, but we worship them as acharyas, as teachers, as guru, because they can give us perfection on the path of devotional service. These four prayers that I just read, each of them gives the understanding that Lord Shiva can give us that Krishna bhakti. So this is how we worship Lord Shiva. And we have very good examples in this regard. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was touring South India, he visited all the prominent Shiva temples wherever he would come across them. He would go in, offer his respects, take darshan, in many cases take the Mahaprasad there. Did this all throughout. Even, amazingly, one time Lord Shiva and Parvati disguised themselves as a Brahmin and wife and came to take Lord Chaitanya's darshan. A little bit of the change there. Lord Chaitanya actually wrote one beautiful 8-verse prayer called the Shivastakam. And I want to read the last 4 verses of this. Yes. And these particular 4 verses kind of culminate, if you will, why we should have some affinity and attraction to Lord Shiva. I offer my obeisances unto you, who bestow happiness to your servitors as you pour upon them the liquid nectar flowing from your red lotus feet, which with charming ankle bells are always jingling. Obeisances unto you who were adorned by an abundance of gems, please endow me today with pure love for Sri Hari, O Sri Ram, O Govinda, O Mukunda, O Sari, O Sri Krishna, O Narayana, O Vasudeva. I offer my obeisances unto you, Sri Shiva, who are the monarch ruling over all the bee-like devotees who are mad to drink the nectar of these names and other innumerable names of Lord Hari, and who thus destroy all grief. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, Sri Shiva, who are forever inquired of confidentially by Sri Narada and other great sages, who very easily bestows boons upon them, who bestows the happiness of Hari Bhakti to those who seek boons of you, and who thereby creates auspiciousness. And as thus, you are the guru of everyone. I offer my obeisances unto you, who are a festival of auspiciousness to the eyes of Gauri, who are the lord of her life energy, who bestow rasa and are expert in forever singing songs with the eagerness of the pastimes of Sri Govinda. And then Lord Chaitanya concludes, as all Ashtakams are, with his benediction. A person who lovingly hears with rapt attention these wonderful eightfold prayers to Lord Shiva can quickly again Sri Hari Prema, as well as transcendental knowledge, the realization of that knowledge, and unprecedented devotional potency. So we see here that these opportunities are encouraged by Lord Chaitanya. These opportunities are encouraged by Lord Chaitanya to take shelter of Lord Shiva, but in the proper understanding. Lord Chaitanya is not encouraging us that Lord Shiva is better than Lord Vishnu. When he was traveling in South India, he met with the Shivites, and there was some great discussion amongst them about the superiority of Lord Shiva or Lord Vishnu, back and forth like this. So many discussions and quotes and shastras are referred to. It's a very lengthy description in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and other Chaitanya Leelas. But Lord Chaitanya concluded it with the following statement, which was very interesting. He said, the foot wash of Lord Vishnu is the Ganga River. And Lord Shiva takes that Ganges River upon his own head. So Vishnu must be superior position to Lord Shiva. So, you know, in this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established that, yes, Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Lord Shiva is his most exalted servant, but able, because of that position, to give us prem bhakti. So it's important that we understand who is Lord Shiva. Sometimes those who are pursuing the path of devotional service are pursuing the larger concept of Vedic knowledge, mistake that Lord Shiva is equal. You see this many times in different types of mandirs and temples. You hear this in many types of bhajans and different types of kirtan programs that go on. All the different names are there and they're all equal like that. And this isn't the case here. These different personalities establish this. In the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where the Prachetas story is told, there is a description in one of the purports by Srila Prabhupada where he very clearly explains the benefit of understanding the proper devotional position of Lord Shiva and how that can assist one in developing their own devotional service. Similarly, in the 12th canto, we find that Markandeya Rishi, he worships Lord Shiva. These are all great personalities throughout the history of Srimad Bhagavatam who are showing this example. Gargamuni himself brought to Lord Krishna's birth ceremony and name-giving by Nanda Maharaj to oversee these activities. He's a disciple of Lord Shiva. Narada Muni, there's this, the prayer we were just reading, but Narada Muni, he describes that how he is always taking instruction from it and eager to hear in this way. And, of course, what about the gopis? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he quotes that famous verse, Gopi Bhartya Parakamalaya Dasa 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 Dasa. We're all simply servants of the gopis. And what are the gopis doing? They're praying to Mahadev to please bless them. Are they praying for a nice home? Are they praying for good wealth? Are they praying for the latest fashionable sari? They're praying, you please bless us that Lord Krishna becomes our husband. So, and this is why. Now, Lord Shiva, you know, he has his blessings, which he gives, but he has two types of blessings. One's called the Sakapata Kripa and Akapata Kripa. Mercy with duplicity and mercy without duplicity. It's explained by Srila Prabhupada in fourth canto. It's explained how Lord Shiva gives his mercy with duplicity to those of demoniac nature. Ravana, Banasura, persons like that, they've approached him for material results, for material advancement, for material benedictions. So he gives him something, but there's always some tail end of it that's going to be problematic or difficult for them. But for the devotee, he gives with no duplicity. His mercy is prema bhakti. His mercy is unimpeded access to the process of devotional service, to advancement towards the goal of devotional service, which is the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. When Dhruva Maharaj was killing all the yakshas, he was going about it, and you all know the story from Bhagavatam that his brother had been killed, and so he went and he just started slaughtering all the yakshas. And one of the things that Svayambhuva Manu said to him to halt him was that, you know, by doing this, you're offending Lord Shiva. These are his associates and followers, and by randomly killing them, you're creating an offense against him. This was one of the things that caused Dhruva Maharaj to stop. He finished in this way. Also, Sri Krishna himself in the Kurma Purana, he says that one who worships me but disrespects Lord Shiva, he is a resident of hell. So all of these things lead up to our understanding that there is nothing wrong as Vaishnavas with worshipping and respecting and taking the shelter of Lord Shiva. Now, when we want to take shelter of someone, we have to assess their qualities. This is part of the process of initiation, is that one approaches a spiritual master, inquires, and then there's some period of time where there's an assessment of the qualification of the guru and the qualification of the disciple. So this nature, this necessity is there. What is one of the most important qualities that we look far in an advanced spiritualist, and that we see exemplary in all the great acharyas. Well, that would be humility. And Lord Shiva himself is a wonderful example of this humility. There is a wonderful book called the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, written by Sanatana Goswami. And it's a little short bit about it. The beginning volume of it is about this personality, Lord Narada Muni, who is really desiring to find out who is the person who's received the mercy of Krishna. Who is that person that Krishna has blessed the most with his mercy? So he goes through this whole process. He sees one king that is greatly noted for his charity and his worship of the Shalagram and like this, and he goes to him, and the king says, oh, no, no, you need to go here. And then, no, 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 you need to go here. And so, you know, on and on he's sent. And he arrives at Lord Brahma's door. Now, he's glorifying, you know, Lord Indra and so on like that, and then eventually ends at Lord Brahma's door. And, of course, Lord Brahma is taking the opportunity also to display his own humility. And he encourages Narada that, actually, the real person you want to see is Lord Shiva. Now, Lord Brahma has the unique position of not only being Narada's father, but being Narada's guru. So the instruction of taking shelter of Lord Shiva has double potency, if you will. So he encourages him that Lord Shiva, he's known as Mahadev, and he's the complete polar opposite of myself. He's steeped in humility. He's always meditating upon the personality of Godhead. He's the greatest example of renunciation. He's detached and uninterested in all things material. And he can even award liberation. I can't do that. Lord Shiva can do that. He's the personality you actually want to go and see. So, there's an interesting thing there. Then Lord Narada Muni inquires, he says, so where will I find Lord Shiva? So Brahma tells him that he's the guardian of Kailash, which is the abode of the great and true pure devotee, Kuvera, who's the treasure of the demigods. He says, but don't go and look for him there. That's not where he is. That personality there is just a mere fraction of an expansion of himself. He says, you go beyond Kailas, you'll find the seven coverings of this world, and you go beyond those, you'll find an abode that is eternal, full of happiness, full of splendor. And there is where Lord Shiva resides. And in that place, he worships his own personal Lord, Lord Sankarshan. So Brahma gives him a final parting instruction. He says, you have the mercy and the ability to go there because of your devotional mood. So quickly, go and take shelter of Lord Shiva. So after this big build-up and, you know, send-off, if you will, by his own father and guru, Narada's very, very excited, and he's, you know, singing and chanting and just traveling as he does throughout the universe, going to find Lord. And there's an interesting description that's given when he comes to Shiva's abode. It mentions that Shiva has just finished his puja. He worships Lord Sankarshan, so that means he does some puja. So he's just finished, and he's chanting and dancing and singing in great ecstasy the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All of his followers are surrounding him, and they're playing various instruments, and some of them are dancing with him in this way and chanting along. And so when Narada Muni arrives there, what's the first thing Lord Shiva does? And this thing that he does is just a small indication of his humility. He begins to praise his own followers for the devotion that they're manifesting. Oh, Narada, you've come. This is so wonderful. Just see the wonderful qualities of these devotees here. Just see how much they enjoy singing and dancing and glorifying the personality of God. So he starts like this. So he's not at all puffed up. Oh, someone's come to see me. Oh, yes, this is correct. He's not thinking like that at all. He begins praising those who are his associates. So Narada enters, and Narada begins to glorify him. All glories to you. All glories to you. You are the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. And then he tells him everything that Lord Brahma has just told him. And as he comes closer, you know, sometimes when you see a devotee you haven't seen in a long time, you try to touch their feet, you know. So as he comes closer, he tries to touch Lord Shiva's feet. And Shiva dodges him, pulls away from him. And then grabs Narada and pulls him to his own chest and embraces him as an equal. Not going to have feet business. He embraces him as an equal. And then he says, oh, son of Lord Brahma, what is it that you were saying? You were a guru of everyone. So eventually, Lord Shiva sits down, and he's surrounded by all of his followers, and he begins to speak a bit about, here again, a bit about the glories of these devotees. And then Narada sits down before him and begins to recite various prayers, just as we've recited some prayers here. Of course, the Shivastika might not have been one of them, Lord Chaitanya hadn't written them yet, but anyway, he begins to recite various prayers in glorification of Lord Shiva, and then describes the mercy of Lord Krishna and what the activities of one who has received that mercy of. Now, Sanatana Goswami, at this point in the story, he describes Lord Shiva as the best of the Vaishnavas. And he states how quickly Lord Shiva grows tired of this glorification. Now, most of us, myself included, if a group of people gather around and start to speak about us, we become a little happy to hear that. Matter of fact, we become a little satisfied that, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, no, stop. So, you know, this is our nature of the false ego. We like to be praised. But Lord Shiva's having none of this. He doesn't want to hear anything about his glories or how this or how that or whatever he says. You know, this is just not his mood. So he then responds to Narada Muni by doing something here that is really quite interesting. I had never read anywhere else where this happens. In the process of this glorification by Narada Muni, Lord Shiva reaches up and covers his ears. He doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't want to hear it. He's not interested. And he says to Narada Muni, he says, I'm just a poor soul, and I'm just hankering to be graced by the mercy of a few of the associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Narada Muni starts to think to himself, wait a minute, have I done something wrong here? Have I offended Lord Shiva? Have I kind of crossed the line or something? I've made him uncomfortable and he's not happy with me. And so in a very soft voice, he says, but my dear Lord Shiva, in truth, you both understand and preach the glories of the Lord and his devotees. Now, this is a very interesting point because he doesn't just say you understand the glories, but that you preach it. And this is one of those places where the indication is clear that we should not be satisfied just to know the glories of the Lord ourselves, but we should be enthusiastic to share those. We should be enthusiastic to preach those. We should be enthusiastic to give those glories to others. So in this way, Narada says like that. You know, he begins to, in a very soft and humble voice, present his case. He continues by saying, as a result of this action of knowing the Lord and spreading his glories, the best of the devotees desire your mercy, and Lord Krishna himself sings your glories. How many times, Narada says, has Lord Krishna worshipped you in his various incarnations? How many times did boons get exchanged? He said, certainly, therefore I know what I'm saying is true. I'm not just making this up. I can't be offending you in this way. So at this point, Lord Shiva does another thing which I had not seen before. He gets up and walks across to Narada Muni and puts his and Narada Muni can't speak anymore. So in a real mood of embarrassment, Lord Shiva says, don't speak anymore these reckless and nonsense words that you're uttering. Just hear instead about the incomprehensible power and nature of my dear Lord. My Lord is as wonderful as a deep ocean, and his glories are as vast. Even though many times I have offended him, he does not reject me. Now, Narada's hearing this. You know, Narada Muni's a very smart individual. He's the guru of practically everyone. So he sees now that Lord Shiva's in this deep mood of appreciation of the qualities of Lord Vishnu, and he makes an attempt, and he reaches over and touches Lord Shiva's feet while he's not paying attention. And then he sits back down. And so gets Lord Shiva to sit back down. And Narada then understands the true nature of Lord Shiva in this way. And he says to him, he says, you are so dear to that infallible Lord. When have you ever offended him? Is it even possible for you to offend the Supreme Lord? In the eyes of the common man, it may look like you've offended him. but you've never made any offense against the Lord. How can that even be considered? And then Narada uses a couple of examples to support his case. Now, this is important because sometimes when you have to present your case, you have to give some evidence. So Narada Muni gives some evidence. He says, when your devotee Banasura fought with the Lord of Aniruddha because you asked for Banasura's life, the Lord saved him and gave him the form of a four-armed Vishnu because you asked for his life. And even when Chitraketu and his associates criticized you because they were devotees of Lord Krishna, you never paid any attention to that. Even though you have opulences and power equal to Brahma and the other demigods, you have a low opinion of material happiness. Wouldn't that be nice to have a low opinion of material happiness? I was thinking, that's such a nice description. Oh, that devotee, yeah, he's not very interested in material happiness. That would be nice for someone to be able to say that about us. He continues on, he says, you live dressed simply in the 10 directions, and you can draw your conclusion of what that means. And you're always completely fixed in trance on Lord Vishnu. I have seen all this, and now I know that you are the most loved by Lord Krishna. So Shiva becomes embarrassed by all this because he has, the evidence has been presented. He can't deny what Narada Muni is saying. And he does something which is another sign of his humility. He hangs his head. You know, when someone's saying something about you that is completely factual, and it is, you know, very glorious, you know, then embarrassment, Lord Shiva hangs his head like that. So, this way, he then begins to mention a couple of things here. Eight or nine different points that Lord Shiva makes. He says, how painful it is to hear these expressions that you're stating. It's not joyous for me to hear about myself. Narada, you yourself are free from all pride, yet I am the root of all pride. And he says, Krishna is the Lord of the prideless sages. How is it possible that I could be among those personalities? My job? Something glorious about my job? I destroy everything that the Lord has made in annihilation. I'm embarrassed by this job. And even if I did have a drop of the Lord's mercy, would I have fought with him over a Parijata flower? When Aniruddha stole Usa, would I have fought with him at that time? You can say that I can give liberation, but the devotees, they think that liberation which I'm able to give is a horrible benediction. They do not want it. Therefore, I conclude it is not me who has received the unlimited mercy of the Lord. So then Lord Shiva concludes all of this by saying, if you want to know who's actually got the mercy of the Lord, go and visit the residence of Vaikuntha. So in this way, he's completely shifted all praise and respect and adoration that Narada comes to him with in a very powerful way by his statements that, no, you go to these devotees. They're the ones that have this. So this is really the sign of a really pure-hearted, humble-minded devotee. And this is one of the reasons why we see Lord Shiva as being qualified to give us blessings in the process of devotional service and in the process of advancing in devotional service. And I'd like to finish up here with one more story, which is one of my favorites. When Lord Krishna had his manifest pastimes in Vrindavan, in Nandagram, of course, Nanda Maharaj had his residence there. Mother Jasoda was there. And one day, Lord Shiva decided, I would like to go and get the darshan of Krishna. This baby, I have never seen my Supreme Lord in this form, so I would like to go and get that. So, as a humble mendicant, of course, Lord Shiva looks like a humble mendicant anyway by his dress, he goes and he knocks on the door at Mother Jasoda's house, and she opens the door, and here's this personality covered in ashes. He's got a snake wrapped around his neck. He's got an animal skin on, and he's got his hair piled up and huge matted locks and rather frightening looking. He says, Ah, Mata, may I please have the darshan of your son? She says, Absolutely not. If I bring my little boy in here to see you, he'll be scared to death. Here, take a chapati and go away. Closes the door in his face. Now, this is very uncommon for a sadhu to go door to door begging alms and to be treated in this way. So we can get the idea some leelas in play. So here, take the chapati and go. Closes the door. So Lord Shiva thinks, oh, I'm so unfortunate. All I wanted was a darshan, but it's not going to happen. So he goes down, those of you who've been in underground, it's a little bit of a hill, so he goes down to the bottom of the hill and he sits there by one kund. Just engaged in his meditation on Lord Vishnu. In the meantime, in the household, baby Krishna wakes up, and baby Krishna wakes up crying like anything. Well, Mother Jasoda tries to give him some milk, he won't stop crying. Tries to give him some attention, he won't stop crying. The gopis come in, they try to, he won't stop crying. So they're thinking, maybe some ghost, or what has happened, you know? Mother Purnamasi comes. Now, Mother Purnamasi is, she knows everything. Those of you that are familiar with Vrindavan Leela, she's at the heart of all the good stuff that goes on. So Mother Purnamasi says, oh, this is most interesting. Let me ask you, Jasoda, did someone come today? Have you received any guests or anything? Is there any, you know, maybe someone has put the evil eye on your baby? She says, well, this one Baba came, very frightful looking. I gave him chapati and sent him away. She said, oh, you probably made some offense against that sadhu, and this is disturbing your baby. So Nanda Maharaj here says, he sends the servants, go and find that sadhu. Go out and look for him and bring him back. So they find Shiva at the, there in the other part of the town, and then he's at the kunda doing his meditation. So they, oh, sadhu, please, you come back. Mother Jasoda's requesting. So he comes back, they sit him down, give him a little water, and they bring baby Krishna for him to see. And Lord Shiva gazes upon this beautiful form of his Supreme Lord that he's never witnessed before. Such a beautiful appearance. Such fair complexion, such beautiful hair, and such a smile on his feet. And he's just so enchanted by this form of baby Krishna. He says, oh, he says, thank you so much. They said, please, give us your blessings, give us your blessings. Stay here, reside here with us. He says, I will stay here, but on one condition. He says, I will stay here on the condition that every day you bring me the Mahaprasad from this child. So there's a temple there, Nandishwar Mahadev. And this is the personality of Lord Shiva who resides at and protects Nandagram, and he receives the Mahaprasadam from this temple every day. So in this way, we can also take the example. If we see fit to engage in the worship of Lord Shiva, then it should be with the Mahaprasada of Lord Krishna, because he doesn't want anything direct. He's like a devotee. You take a devotee out to the nicest place, oh, Prabhu, here, sit down. This is prasadam? No. Oh, thank you. The devotee always wants prasadam. So Lord Shiva is always looking for prasadam. So in this way, these are just a very small particle of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Lord Shiva, Supreme Personality only, not of Godhead, but the Supreme Personality. This is how we see him as such a powerful individual in being able to bless us with prema bhakti and being able to protect us. Actually, there's one other very nice story in regards to his protection. When Sanatana Goswami was living in Vrindavan, Sanatana Goswami was preparing to write all of the different books that Mahaprabhu had entrusted him to write. So he went out to Radhakund. There's one place near the Radhakund Govardhan area. It's called Manasi Ganga. Very beautiful place there. And very quiet. Of course, it's quite built up as a town now. But in those days, a very quiet place. So Sanatana Goswami went there, and he resided in one little hut there, just, you know, some little place there. But there was one problem. As he would sit down to write, the mosquitoes were horrible. Now, Sanatana Goswami is a greatly advanced devotee. He's not bothered by these things. But believe me, the mosquitoes were really bad at describes. So after tolerating for, you know, some short period of time, he said, all right, this is it. I've got to go somewhere else. I'm being disturbed. I can't focus on my writing. This is the service that Lord Chaitanya has given me. So one Brahmin came by. It was actually Lord Shiva in the guise of a Brahmin. And he saw that the sadhu was packing up his stuff. You know, what's there to pack up? Put a couple things in a bag and go. He says, Baba, where are you going? I thought you would come here to write. He says, oh, he said, the mosquitoes are too much here. I can't stay here any longer. He says, no. You stay. I promise you from this day forth, the mosquitoes will never bother you. So Lord Shiva is known as the Lord over lower species. I don't think you're much lower than a mosquito. But at any rate, so from that day forward, and if you go there now, I've been to this place many times and there's no mosquitoes. So in this way, he gave the satisfaction to Sanatan Goswami, protected him and allowed him to stay there. And the form that he has there is Chakaleshwar Mahadev, the protector of the Govardhan Hill area also. So anyway, we'll finish there. Just a few glories of Lord Shiva as we try and take shelter and pray that he blesses us with unflinching faith and devotion to attaining pure devotional service ourselves. Hare Krishna. We invite all of you to come outside now. We have nice performances and nice glorification of Lord Shiva through song and dance. Hare Krishna.